1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And 51551 is our text number, and Joe at rte.ie. Well, there's only two words on the lips of almost everyone in the country in the last 72 hours, and that is Mijella Moynihan, the Garda, who was working in Store Street, and the authorities discovered she was pregnant, believe it or not. And because she was pregnant and she was deemed not to be married, she was threatened with dismissal and indeed deeply humiliated, and eventually her career was prematurely terminated when she was told that she'd no future because of her, quote, her history, believe it or not. Anne Cleary, Anne, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You were a Garda and you knew Mijella.
I did, yes. I worked briefly in a station in close proximity to her, so I would have known her socially. A lovely girl, a very, very nice girl, a very bubbly girl, a very good worker. You know, what happened to Mijella was so wrong. And she's not the only one.
Well, that's what I want to ask you. Expand on that. She was not the only one.
She's not the only female member of the force who was subjected to such absolute tyranny in relation to their pregnancies outside of wedlock. Hmm. I'm aware of two other females who also had babies out of wedlock and who were similarly treated. In fact, one of them was actually refused maternity leave, and I know that Mary Robinson took a case to the European Court of Human Rights on her behalf so that she would be entitled to maternity leave. They were treated despicably, absolutely despicably. There was another girl in Limerick, similar circumstances, and you know, they were more or less forced to give their babies up because there was no hope for them hanging on to their jobs if they didn't.
And this was in the Ireland of the 1980s, not the 1950s.
No, we're talking the 80s. Yeah, yeah. I joined the force in October 84, and I served in Dublin for a couple of years before I transferred to Cork.
One of the arguments put forward by the then General Secretary of the Garda Representative Association, who basically backed the commissioner in disciplining Mijella, one of the arguments put forward, there are not many women in the force.
That would be correct. There weren't that many women in the force at the time. I know when I came to Dublin, my number was 370. So at that point in time, there were 370 female members in the force. You're talking a force of about, what, maybe 10,000? We were quite a novelty factor in that regard. I think I was probably the first female member on the unit I went to in Fitzgibbon Street when I went there. Mm-hmm. But, gosh, how can I say this? Why should we be treated any different to our male colleagues?
Well, for example, remind people of the uniform you had to wear.
I'm sorry now for laughing, Joe. It was what I would call a pencil skirt. I think it was about 2 inches below the knee. We had to wear black leather lace-up shoes with Cuban heels. And it was quite difficult to run in that. And I can assure you, you certainly had to hitch it up if you were going over the wall after somebody.
And you had to wear a pencil skirt. There was no choice.
You had to wear a skirt. There was no. The trousers actually didn't come into play until the late 90s. In fact, I think after about 1993, because I do recall having had my first child, and myself and another ex-colleague now, Miss Geraldine Ennis, we got a committee together to try and, you know, encourage our authorities to give us a more practicable uniform. So it wasn't until then that we got the trousers, and they also dropped the ban from the title Ban Garda, and we all became Gardaí.
I said, do our Aerolingus female stewards, are they allowed to wear trousers, I wonder?
I actually don't know.
I thought there was an issue there as well. This is the Ireland of 2019. We'll find out in a few minutes, but it is.
It was a very impracticable kind of uniform, you know, for male or female. If fellas wanted to wear skirts, I'm sure they could have. But I do recall one time going out on patrol, and it was particularly cold this night in Dublin with sub-zero temperatures, and going up to the men's locker rooms and borrowing a pair of trousers from one of my colleagues. It was so cold, and putting them on and trying to scoot out the door without the sergeant seeing me. So when he saw the top half of me and he saw the long coat, I don't know if you remember the old great coats, they were down to your knee. And he called me back in. He said, "What's that you're wearing?" I said, "I borrowed them." It said, "It's very cold." He said, "Don't let me see you wearing those again," he said.
And did you go on patrol that night wearing trousers?
I did.
So you were the force then?
Probably.
That's unbelievable. And what, when you were listening to Aoife Kelleher and Sarah Blake's and Liam O'Brien's documentary, what were you thinking? Like, what?
Well, I've only briefly listened to part of Madela's podcast. It takes me back. It does take me back. I didn't experience, I suppose, the same level of, what do you call it, harassment that Madela experienced. But I do recall being in the station one day and sitting at a manual typewriter typing a file and a senior officer coming in and standing behind me and putting the hand down over me and grabbing me by my boob is the only way I can describe it.
Well, that's assault. That's
and I wasn't
assault,
impressed at all, but I'd be a very, what would you say, very quick on the feet. And I literally just elbowed him into his nether region and I said, you know what now? I said, I don't care how many bars, pips and stripes you have, nobody does that to me. And that was the end of the conversation, problem solved.
And was there? Because Magella alluded to today, she said she didn't want to talk about it at this stage, but she subsequently was, she said, sexually harassed. Was that common in the Gardaí, where there'd be so many men and so few women?
I suppose it would depend on the temperament of the person receiving it. I suppose if they felt that you weren't going to react to it, they wouldn't bother. I do recall on the very first day I started in my new station, being brought on a tour of the station, and in Fitzgibbon Street at the time there was a gym in the basement which was open to be used by all members in the force but on particular days for ladies so that they could have separate time. Yeah. But my colleague who brought me on a tour of the station literally flung the door open and there was some poor colleague standing there in his all together and I just laughed and I just said, you have a very nice bum, and I left it at that. And I suppose I didn't give them the reaction they were looking for, so they just stopped.
Okay, so stay with us, Anne, because Elsie is on the line. Okay, that's Gardaí, or a female Gardaí, were threatened with dismissal because they had a baby and they weren't married. That was happening in Ireland, the Gardaí, in the 80s. Elsie, your sister also were talking about the 80s. She was in a different profession. She was a nurse.
That's right, Joe.
And what happened to her, Elsie?
Well, she was a trainee nurse in the Children's Hospital, Cromwell's Children's Hospital, and she was pregnant and she was told that she would have to leave, and she was basically told that if she gave it up, that they would take her back.
My God. If she gave it up?
It, yes. They refer to it as it.
Then the it was the baby.
Yes, there was a baby, and it said to her that basically that she would have to go. I think from my memory she was going into her second year of nursing, and she kind of counteracted that by saying to the matron that, well, there's three girls on my year who have had abortions, and you took them back. You know, why aren't you going to take me back if I have my baby? And they just said that they wouldn't, and that she wouldn't be coming back.
And what insofar as I know, the chairman of the board of Cromwell and Children's Hospital, the Archbishop of Dublin, was then. I know, I don't think it still is ex officio, but I don't think Dermot Martin actually takes it up because of his, I may presume, presumption of objection to the fact that he automatically becomes chairperson. But anyway, the chairperson at the time of the board of Our Lady's Children's Hospital was the Archbishop of Dublin. Was that an argument put forward, ethos and all this carry on?
Well, I don't know if there was ever, she was even ever given the opportunity for an argument. I mean, she put the argument up that, you know, clearly that if you went off and had an abortion, they'd take you back because there was no, you weren't there as an unmarried mother or whatever. But she wasn't willing to do that. So she left her nursing career and had to give it up and in order to keep her baby, and went to some of these homes in Dublin and went from one to the other and ended up having a lovely little baby girl.
And well done. But one of the Michela Moynihan was saying in the documentary, and indeed subsequently, that she couldn't tell her father. And she was actually watching telly one night when the news broke, which proves that in one sense that people were, there was outrage there because the news did break that the Gardaí had threatened a Garda with a disciplinary action because she was pregnant. Did your family know about your sister?
I didn't know, Joe. I didn't actually know. Some of my older siblings did know, but I didn't know because I was still in school. But I had an inkling that there was something going on. But it was very much kept quiet. And how we did know that the baby had arrived, because she had been in various homes, you know, run by the Cura Association.
Yeah.
And for various reasons, she had to leave those because she was basically regarded as a slave in each of the homes. That's what she was doing there until the baby arrived. But how we found out that the baby had arrived was a telegram came to the local post office, and it would read that Mary had arrived at the airport or Joseph had arrived at the airport. And we would know then that either a baby girl or a baby boy had arrived.
So the telegram read, Mary has arrived at the airport, meaning your sister had a baby girl.
Yes.
Wow.
And that's how we got word, because there was no telephone then.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have a telephone, and that was the way that my mother got the word that my sister had.
And when your sister had the baby, she refused to give it up for adoption. What happened? Where did she go? Where did she live? Because one of the problems is, and it was John McGarren who first highlighted this when he was sacked because of something he wrote in a book. As a teacher in the Belgrove School in Clontarf, and he was sacked, one at the behest of the Archbishop of Dublin, the patron of the school, because of one paragraph in a book called The Dark. And the problem was that once he was, by the way, the INTO supported the Archbishop, the union, but the point he alluded to at the time, once I was sacked from that school, given that the Catholic Church ran 99% of the schools in the country, I had no hope of getting into another school. It ended my career. Did your sister feel the same, given that the Catholic Church was running so many hospitals that she couldn't get a job anywhere else?
I think at the time it was, you know, once the baby arrived, she couldn't have worked anywhere anyway because she wouldn't have had anyone to look after the baby. It was kind of a very difficult situation in so far as that at that time, my sister's pregnancy was hidden from the locality. We were in a country area. It was a horrendous thing to happen, and it was a shameful thing to happen. And the one thing I always give to my lovely mother, God rest her, was that she actually said to my daughter, to her daughter, my sister, she actually said to her, you know, whatever you want to do with the baby, we'll stand over you. Now, I heard this afterwards, like obviously I didn't know this at the time,
yeah.
But that she did say to her was, we will look after you. My father, because of a situation was in, he was actually working in England and he basically had nothing to do with it. But my mother, one thing I do remember her saying was, do not get married. She was adamant that she would not get married because she was pregnant. So she still ended up in these homes up in Dublin. Yeah. And then when the baby arrived, she eventually came home. And I still can see that little baby. And we just thought heaven had opened up first. We thought we had this little baby in the house. It was wonderful. And she came home and she lived at home with us. But then she had the wrath of the locality. And I remember she went into a shop one day, for example, and she was put to the end of the queue because she had a baby.
Unbelievable stuff.
Yeah, and it's like a little village area, it was, you know, it was gossip and it was shameful.
This was the Ireland of the 1980s.
Yes, yes. I mean, it was unbelievable that now it is. Now it's unbelievable that it was accepted and it was allowed to happen. And I mean, loads of people decide to have babies now without getting married and decide when they want to get married.
Absolutely.
She ended up, her daughter actually, that little baby, went on to be a nurse. And she went on, her mother did various different jobs. And she ended up marrying the father of the baby. And she had a couple more children. And she doesn't talk very much about it at the time of what happened, but I know a certain amount of what happened and it shouldn't have happened either.
Absolutely.
While she was pregnant. Like the police told her that she would never come to anything, she would never get anywhere and that she'd have to give it up and she'd never get a job. And a doctor actually, soon before she was delivered, told her what was she going to do with it.
What? Okay. I'll take this incredulity out of my voice from now on. These things happened and they happened in our lifetime with television and, phones were not as, obviously no mobile phones, but phones and things like that weren't as prominent as they are today. But anyway, stay with us, Elsie. Okay, that was the Gardaí through Anne and Magella Mine, and Gardaí, female Gardaí, how they were treated so badly at that time. Elsie talking about nurses who, her sister's case, where she was asked to basically leave because she was pregnant and was not married. Corina, good afternoon. The Defence Forces, the Army.
Yes, hi. I'm ringing on behalf of a fellow colleague.
Okay.
And she's given me permission, but she's just too upset and doesn't want to go through it again. She had a baby, and again she was single. Because she had a hidden pregnancy. Yeah. So when she had the baby, she held on to the baby and said, "Lovely boy." And but her company commander refused her maternity leave because she didn't give him a month's notice. So she was given a long weekend after having the child. And then he proceeded to torture her and bring her in every week and told her that she had to produce a weekly budget to prove that she could financially provide for her son.
And what, what's it have to do with him? What year are we talking
exactly,
about?
What it has. Oh, November 1981.
1981, okay.
Females, we had just finished training.
Okay, so your friend managed to conceal the pregnancy. Why did she feel she had to conceal it, Corina?
I can't tell you that.
That's
her prerogative. She wanted to get through the training and she wanted to finish her training. And she successfully did that and managed to have a beautiful child. And then when she was posted to her unit, again, she already had the child, didn't give months' notice, so wasn't entitled to any leave whatsoever to help with the child. The child was only a few weeks old.
Yeah. And she was given a long weekend pass. What does that mean?
A long weekend pass. That means you can stop work on Friday at 4 o'clock and come back in on Tuesday morning at 9 o'clock.
So her maternity leave was a day?
A day, yeah. Yeah, Monday, yeah.
In 1980? Yeah.
In 1981, yeah.
1981.
From the Irish Defence Forces. And then she had to provide a weekly budget every week.
What was that about?
To her company commander. Well, he sort of indicated, well, I don't feel as a single woman in the Defence Forces that you can afford this child. So I want proof that you're not damaging this child or you're not providing for this child correctly. And she had a horrendous time.
There was no
social worker then at the time for any females or any males either to go to get help. That all changed, thankfully, in 1992.
Yeah.
But, so in 1981, the female guards and female soldiers were treated this way.
Horrendously. Stay with us, Karina. 51551. Rebecca Roach. Good afternoon, Rebecca.
Hi, Joe.
And we, as I say, Magella and indeed Anne talk about the what happened to female members of An Garda Síochána when they became pregnant. Elsie is talking about a nurse, her sister, when she became pregnant. Corina spoke about a soldier when she became pregnant. And you're going to talk about a teacher who became pregnant because it's your late stepmother, Eileen Flynn. Will you just remind people, Rebecca, of, again, disbelief, I suppose, will greet this story as well, Rebecca. Tell us, please.
Well, Eileen met my dad and had a relationship with him in the early 1980s. And she got pregnant from him in 1981. And she was a teacher in a secondary Catholic school in our small town. And when the school found out about her pregnancy, they weren't happy, obviously, because my dad was still technically married. My mother had left my dad a few years previously, and my dad was left with bringing up myself and my sister and my brother. Eileen fell in love with my dad, and the relationship took its natural course. When the school found out about it, they through complaints from people in the town that she was living and having a relationship with a married man. And the school spoke to her and they were aware of her pregnancy and they told her that her job was untenable if she didn't give the child up for adoption and stop her relationship with my father. And this was late 1981. 1982 my brother was born, sorry.
And Eileen decided...
To carry on with the pregnancy. Yes. Obviously, she it was quite late in the pregnancy when the school found out. She was a young woman as well, in her 20s, very impressionable, highly educated, really passionate about teaching.
Yeah.
And I think I remember her saying, you know, that she wouldn't give up one hair on her baby's body for all of their jobs. You know, she was, you know, at the time, you know, a woman of her time, basically. But she, yeah, she wouldn't do it. She wouldn't give him up for adoption. He's now 37.
Brilliant.
Yeah, but, I know.
But the Holy Faith School sacked Eileen.
They sacked her, yeah, because they claimed, obviously, she wouldn't give him up for adoption and she wouldn't stop having the relationship with my dad. And, yeah, she got sacked. She obviously went through the court for a case of unfair dismissal, but was unsuccessful in her case every time, which was, it kind of, you know, it broke her. It took away her it took away her career. Because, again, as you pointed out, you know, the Catholic Church was in charge of 99.9% of the schools in Ireland, so she was completely unemployable. There was she couldn't get a job for a long number of years afterwards, you know.
And
that was 1982. She gave birth to my brother in June of 1982.
But, reading some of the correspondence. In 1995, Sister Rosemary Duffy of the Holy Faith Order wrote to the Irish Times, said, Eileen Flynn was dismissed because in the town where most of the pupils and parents of the school lived, she openly and despite warnings to the contrary, continued to live in a lifestyle flagrantly in conflict with the norms which the school sought to promote.
Mm. Well, they said she wasn't observing the Catholic ethos of the school. You know, in her world, she was providing a family unit. You know, my dad was bringing up three children on his own. And she was providing that maternal figure, that mother figure for us as well.
You know, it was
a perfectly normal, natural thing. I was a 9-year-old child. You know, my sister was 10 and I had a younger brother, you know. Okay, legally, technically, he was married. But he hadn't, you know, my mother wasn't in the picture, you know.
But, and how was Eileen after she was sacked? Now she's just been sacked. She has a new baby. She's in a relationship with your dad. There's many children, three children. So there's now four children in the household.
Four children, yeah.
And how did Eileen manage and cope? And how did both of them cope? But obviously Eileen's the one that was sacked.
Well, it was her livelihood was gone. Eileen was educated. She went to UCG. She was an Irish, English and history teacher. She was super intelligent woman. They took away her livelihood. You know, she threw herself into bringing us up. And my dad, he's a publican in the town, you know, she threw herself into helping just in a normal family business and an environment, you know. But, you know, there was a spark gone. She lost a little bit of her spark that she couldn't teach, you know, and also just kind of seen as kind of just a fallen woman in a lot of kind of the establishment eyes as well. You know,
so she wasn't sacked because, and same with Magella Moynihan. Magella's immediate superior was writing letters saying she's a brilliant guard. She's a brilliant guard. Eileen loved teaching. She wasn't sacked because she wasn't a good teacher. The opposite, in fact, she was sacked because of her private life.
Yeah, but they downgraded her classes. She was before she was sacked. You know, she kind of refused. She made a stance on that she wasn't giving my brother up for adoption, and they kind of started giving her less classes and moved her down in kind of, you know, in
allocation, whatever.
You know, exactly, and just kind of just phasing her out, literally. You know, it was a terrible time for her. You know, I was young, but she talked about it for a long number of years. You know, that they took away everything. It ruined her employability, basically. And for the establishment to have that much power and control over somebody, how they choose to live their private life, you know?
Yeah. Stay with us, Rebecca. Donal, good afternoon. Also, a former Garda, Donal.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What happened in your case, Donal?
Well, first of all, I know Magella. I've met her many times. A brilliant guard, as you said there.
Yeah.
And I met her on a train a couple of years ago, and I had a chat with her on the journey. Yeah. And I felt I could tell her a secret, and I didn't realise that she was going through hell as well.
Right.
Because I went through a terrible interrogation that really has affected me all my life. Mm-hmm. I suffer from high blood pressure and anxiety. I was seen in the company of a gay colleague at one stage.
Yeah.
And he was being an investigator for some minor breach of something. But I was seeing his company, and 2 weeks later, I was interrogated in a room by a superintendent and a detective sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
I'll never forget it, but I stood up to it. I stood up great. I answered the questions, and they wanted to know, had I property abroad, and how did I know the guy that I was with?
Yeah.
I said, I know them all for over years, and that I knew in the city. And, are you gay? I said, I know now, I'm not. Did you ever have sex with a woman? And all this kind of terrible. I said, I didn't, because I had a very strict upbringing. And they started distracting me with different... They'd go off the conversation with something else, and then they'd come back again. I came out of that meeting, and I was shattered, and I've got counselling. I've got, along with trying to cope with a family, a tragedy at the time.
Yeah.
I came out of that meeting, and I'd go to the doctor. He referred me for counselling, which didn't work, because I saw the counsellor looking at his watch, and it was €80 an hour. So I continued for 5 hours. That was €400, and that in the late 80s was an awful lot of money.
And when were you interrogated about your private
the
life?
The late 80s.
The late 80s?
Yes. Yes. And the guy I was seen with, he had collected me at the airport.
Okay.
Coming back from holidays. And he told me later that he was interrogated, and they started listing out so many members' names. Is he gay? Is he gay? Is he gay? There was 20 or 30 on the list. And it wasn't that they were investigating the larceny. It was because they wanted to know how many gay people were on the job. And I suppose, Joe, they were the same thinking as a former pope who said that the way he was going to cut out paedophilia in the clergy was that he was going to prevent gay priests joining.
Yeah.
Now, as you know, you're a very well-educated guy, Joe, and I admire you greatly for your balance and your reporting and everything, but you know that completely two different things. Gay people are interested in people of their own age or older, which I would be, and they were... The paedophilia is different.
Absolutely, absolutely.
But it shows you the lack of knowledge and the ignorance.
And were they saying, Donald, that if we can find out that you're gay, we will dismiss you from the force?
It looked like that, or not give me what I might want for a transfer or something.
Yeah,
but I never, even though I got many awards over the years in the job, I always did my job conscientiously, that I never would dare go for further promotion, even though I was qualified, because I thought that that would be in my record and would open up old wounds, and I couldn't cope with that.
And have you been tempted to try and get your records, Donald?
I never even thought.
The only thing is, Magella fought hard to get hers, but now they said they're missing. But some of them were so savagely redacted that I think there was, in one document, there was only 3 words visible over 2 pages, and the 3 words were Magella, Magella, and Magella. Everything else was redacted. Now, Donald, this Saturday is the Gay Pride March, the Pride March in a lot of places, including Dublin, and the Gardaí, for the first time, they've been in it before, but the Gardaí are being given permission to march in uniform in the Pride, and a number of Garda cars have been done up in the Pride rainbow. Do you have any contact with Gardaí now who will talk about how people who are gay are treated in the force?
I wouldn't, because I don't know whether it's denial or not, but I'm not too sure now whether it was what it was, but whether it was a phase I went through or what, but it's a lonely life, and I make the most of it, and I get medication for my anxiety and my, you know, my high blood pressure. But it made me sad over the weekend. I couldn't help thinking of poor Magella and what she had to go through, and how she went out on her duty and did her duty.
But she,
and it was so traumatic compared to my little incident.
From what you say, Donald, that tribunal that you described there about the two shouting at you, are you gay, and asking for. But this is Magella talking about the similar tribunal she was brought to as a witness as such, because it was the father of the child who was being, she'd already been disciplined and threatened with dismissal, but it was the father of the child that was being disciplined. She had to go to Cavan, I think, on her own, no representation, no support, and was brought into this room on her own.
I walked in and the father of my son was sitting on the right. There was chief superintendent, superintendents, inspector, a sergeant and a sonographer. And I was put in a seat in the middle of the floor. To put a 22-year-old vulnerable person who did nothing wrong into a room full of men and to tear me apart like they did.
Because I felt I had done something wrong. You know, it's just a feeling of being in interrogation like that I felt... What have I done wrong? And why should I be interrogated? And the abuse of did you ever have sex with a woman? You know, it was shocking. And
at that stage, you were nearly 40, were you?
I was, yeah, I was.
You've been in the Gardaí for what, 15, 16 longer years? I'm sure you were.
I was.
Good service.
20 years.
So someone that was 20 years a guard was interrogated and asked, 20 years a guard, so you're in your nearly 40, and was asked about your private life, and have you had sex with a woman?
Did you ever have sex with a woman? Are you gay? And it went through me.
And how long?
I thought my life was over.
You thought your life was over?
I did.
Why, Donald?
Because I thought the whole force will hear of it now. And whether I am or not, they'll talk and they'll gossip and it will go down on my record and that'll be the finish for further promotion.
Because, to quote one assistant commissioner to Magella, because of your history. This is what they
think. Your history, yes.
And Donald, how long more did you spend in the Gardaí?
I spent another 12 years, and I went retired as quickly as I could because I had enough of it. And the guy that told me that my name was mentioned because I was seen with him, he said, "You'll be always looking over your shoulder, you know, and you'll always, you know, be on edge."
And you mentioned earlier to me, Donald, now if I misheard, but I think you did say you did refer to yourself as gay.
If you ask me that today, I have no interest whatsoever.
I understand that, but...
I don't know, was it the shock of that?
Yeah.
Or, I don't know, I get on well with both men and women.
Yeah, okay, that's fine.
Magella
mentioned, as indeed... did Anne Cleary mentioned that the two Gardaí who were female, that they were subject because of what she'd been through, she was subject to unwanted sexual harassment. Did you get any harassment of any type after this was thrown at you? Are you gay?
No, but there was jokes cracked in my company. That was very hurtful.
Okay.
And I living alone and go home, and that would play in your mind.
Yeah.
There was a lot of homophobia in the job.
Yeah.
Well, I won't say a lot. There was some, and they were more vocal than others. But I still think of that day, and I, you know, even say, I'm wondering how many knew that time that I was interrogated. I mean, I was such a... a perfect kind of a fella that I never did anything wrong to, and yeah. I used to be affected by anybody that would bring discredit in the job.
Yeah.
But as regards to Magella, I pray for her, and she has opened an old wound today as regards her interrogation. And she's a lovely person, mm-hmm. and maybe if things had turned out properly for me, she'd have been up in a high-ranking job, which I know she'd have been fit for in the job. And she'd have an awful lot to contribute.
Yeah,
she was so humane. And it's strange that I felt on the train that day talking to her, I'd known her briefly before, that I felt in her company that there was something about her that she radiated
mm-hmm.
confidence and heart. And, you know,
yeah.
she could identify and actually... They often say that the people that are less afflicted in life are the least empathetic. That it's people who have gone through and mm-hmm. gone through tragedy or gone through hard times that they don't go up on a pedestal and judge others.
Yeah.
You know. But
and you would have left the Gardaí at the beginning of this century.
Yes.
That'd be right. Okay.
I would.
And your parting, what was that like, given what you've been through? I'm sorry, given what you've been put through.
Oh, I was complimented and all that, and yeah. I had a good, nice party. And that, and at the back of your mind, you'd say, oh, would they ever know that I was interrogated? And interrogated for what? It's just self-crucifixion, yeah. if you like.
Yeah.
Faith that has got me talking to you today, because I was found it very difficult with your produce to go on, and I think it's going to help others.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, because I was so isolated, so lonely, and I spent a fortune for years on counselling,
right.
and trying to talk to people. They didn't. I'm sorry to say, they looked at their watch. There was a guy up there in Lower Kilmacud Road.
Okay, don't go down that road because we have named.
But
no, I haven't named the road. Okay, but Donald, will you stay with us over the break if you would, please? Because I think, and there's other people who want to join in the conversation as well. This is Donald who's talking about his experience as a Garda and being accused. Savagely interrogated about his private life because he was seen with another Garda who apparently was gay. 51551 joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And so far we've heard from Donald, a former Garda who was interrogated when he was 40 years of age, having been a respected Garda for what, nearly 20 years, as about his sex life, and asked was he gay, and as Donald described so vividly, it was a deeply traumatic experience. From Rebecca Roach, whose stepmother was Eileen Flynn, sacked as a school teacher in Wexford for having a child and not being married and having a relationship with a man who was previously married. We had Corina, whose friend was a member of the Irish Army, again in the 1980s, 1981. She was pregnant, felt she had to keep it a secret in the Defence Forces. And then when the Defence Forces found out that she'd had a baby, an incredible experience for Karina's friend. She had a baby. She was reprimanded by her commander, given one single day's maternity leave, and interrogated on a regular basis about how she was looking after her child and if she was capable of it. Elsie, whose sister was a nurse in the 1980s and who became pregnant, and again, in the eyes of the hospital, wasn't married. This was not acceptable. And she was told either to have the child adopted or leave. She left. And now we have Hazel. Hazel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
And what year are we talking about, Hazel?
We're talking about 89. We're talking about the 80s as well. It was a completely different Ireland to what it is now.
Mm-hmm.
And people were not openly living together. People were... young people were not perceived to be having sex, even though they were. And sometimes it was cute ones who didn't get caught, but those who did get caught, like myself, were interrogated. We were shamed. We felt shamed, and we hid pregnancy. We hid the babies often. Unfortunately for Magella, she wasn't able to hold on to her baby.
Yeah.
I was asked to give mine away.
What were you working at, Hazel? What was your...
I was a student nurse.
Oh, student nurse. Yeah, okay, sorry. Okay.
Yeah. I was brought before the matron on a few occasions and asked to give my child away. And I just listened. And I was told as well that I'd maybe taken off the wards, that patients mightn't like to see me pregnant. And maybe I was a bit brazen, but I asked what was the difference with other women, other nurses, staff nurses that were pregnant, and how would patients react differently. And that didn't go down too well. Then I was told that my mother may have to take the baby. And I saw red at this stage because she hadn't asked me, had I a mother alive? Was she well? Was she in a wheelchair?
Yeah.
Was she able to? So I politely told her that my mother had raised 4 children.
Yeah.
And that she had done enough by that, and that this was my baby, and I wanted to have my own baby, and that I had a partner, that we were going to raise this child together. And she said that that might interfere with my work, and that I would now have to start preparing dinners for my partner.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I thought, oh my God, in my own mind. And I said to her when I got a chance, I said, actually, I said, it's not like that. I said, in fact, he's making the dinners for me. Now, I can't remember. Yeah. I don't think he was, but it didn't matter. But basically, I wasn't up to the standards of nursing and I was considered a shame. And then I was sent to geriatrics to cover up the fact that I was pregnant because the old people in the geriatric part of it mightn't have noticed as much. Now, I was pregnant, and nowadays, you're not allowed to do night duty as per the Pregnancy Act. And when you're pregnant, you're much more prone to injury. And I got an injury. I thought it was a urinary tract infection. So I went to the GP and he told me I had a back injury. And then I had to go to the tutors and tell them that I couldn't work on the geriatrics. They moved me to an easy ward. And the third year student, well, she was nearly qualified at this stage. I was a bit younger than her. And she didn't speak to me because she was sent to a very heavy place. And I had taken her place. And it caused a lot of unnecessary hurt. Like nowadays, thankfully, I hope that doesn't occur. But again, I can't say that because I'm not in the present day in that situation.
So you were shifted to a geriatric ward because matron thought that the older people wouldn't notice that you were pregnant.
I wasn't on show as much then, you see, to the general public.
Yeah.
If I was in a geriatric ward, you know, they mightn't really. And then, to add insult to injury, now, I am not against male nurses, and some of them are very good, but it was inappropriate to send me there because it was far too busy. And it was probably short-staffed, and they needed everyone to be able to pull their full weight. But there was a male nurse who used to wear a stethoscope around his neck with a white uniform, a white coat, and some of the geriatric patients thought he was a doctor, so they wouldn't ask him to help. And I remember, which I've been 30 odd years nursing now, and I remember one of the girls from the kitchen coming out, and she helped me, but she said, for bleep's sake, this is ridiculous, and helped me to try and lift a lady up the bed, because at that stage there was no manual handling either, training.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it was a different Ireland, basically. It's sad that all of this took place, but at least now something, you know, it's good that people are talking, because hopefully we won't do that to our young ladies of today.
And Hazel, can I ask, again, the whole thing, you've been sent to a geriatric ward, anyone that's in two different places yesterday with older people, and one of the big things you have to do is lift is
yes.
Now there
yes.
are there
and
now
no weight,
yeah, and now there's remote control and the bed lifts up and all that carry on. But one of the things you have to do is lift, and you hear one nurse saying, "I need a second nurse with me to lift or whatever." But you were saying you were heavily pregnant and you were forced to lift patients.
Well, now in fairness, I mean, it wasn't that I was forced. I could have walked away and said, you know, I could have possibly gone off the floor. But if I did that, I would probably be up before the matron again. And I just didn't know what to do because these people needed to be brought up the bed. Some of them were quite confused and they needed their food.
And there was nobody around, yeah, and the nurses were all very busy, and I needed to be able to perform as part of the workforce. So I was trying to do that, but I couldn't because my back got so sore, and I didn't even notice that. Like, I mean, I'm not saying that I possibly wouldn't have got a back injury because it's a high occupational risk, but it happened very early because of it.
Yeah.
But, like, I mean, worst things happen to people. So,
and what was the reaction, can I ask, in the home place, as they say, because there have been stories today of...
In the family,
isn't yes, it? The family and the town.
Different families are different. My own family, my mother would have been very religious, and been very into what would the neighbours think. My dad wasn't religious. He was probably the opposite, because in his day, his parents had an altercation with the Catholic priest, whereby my grandfather had epilepsy and my father was kept home from school because he fell in the fire. And my grandmother had a small farm and they had to go out and try and make a living. And they were brought before court and lost the case and had to go back to school. So he just felt there was no humanity there. So my father hadn't been religious. When I told him he was fine, my mother was a bit upset, worrying about the neighbours. But over time, I mean, she's a little girl, is the apple of everybody's eye. She's now no longer a little girl. She's a woman now.
Yeah.
And her father's family were very good, but it was a big family, and I wasn't the first one that it had happened to.
Okay.
On their side.
Yeah. Hazel, thanks indeed. But you stayed in nursing, thankfully.
I did.
Yeah.
I loved nursing.
Yeah.
I always wanted to do nursing.
Given these are the themes that are emerging today, afterwards, harassment, would that
after
have featured?
What?
Oh, did you ever suffer harassment afterwards because of what you've been through?
I can't say that I would say that.
Okay,
no.
Okay.
I just had to come to terms with being embarrassed and shamed.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, what doesn't kill you make you stronger. Do you know what I mean? You get through these things. But it's just when Magella was talking today and even reading her article in the paper, it resonated so much. Like, fortunately, there for the grace of God goes anyone. I was lucky. I was able to have my daughter and have my life with her.
Yeah.
But I feel so sorry for her that she was denied that opportunity. And I suppose, unfortunately, that was... And I'm not dismissing it now, saying that we lived in an Ireland like that. You know, there was a lot of good people who disagreed with what was going on as well, but it was very hard to vocalise that. You know, you needed to be very strong in order to do that.
Yeah. Okay, Hazel, kind regards to you and your family.
Thank you very much.
Thanks indeed. And I'll be back after this break. 51551.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And joe@rt.ie. Let me bring in Greg. Greg, go ahead. Your point, please.
Well, I was listening to Rebecca.
Yeah. Rebecca Roach.
Eileen wasn't sacked because she was pregnant.
Eileen Flynn. Okay. Well,
yes.
Yeah. Why was she? Well, keep going, yeah?
Well, I'm just saying that what she said was wrong, Joe.
And why was she sacked?
Your researcher asked me that herself a few minutes ago, and I said, read the judgment. Do you know that the case went to,
it went to the
Industrial Tribunal?
Yeah.
Then the Circuit Court.
And then the High Court.
And then the High Court, yes.
Okay. And in the High Court?
And she lost her case. I therefore must dismiss this appeal. So, I mean, it was the courts that decided, Joe. No, I know what my sister did. We tried to help her.
You need to tell people who your sister was, Greg, sorry.
My sister was the principal that took over in 1981,
mm-hmm.
And she tried to help Eileen when she told her she was pregnant. It's all in the judgment, Joe. You know what the family tried to do, you know, help her. Eileen was going to go to France or England or somewhere to have the baby, and Pauline, my sister, said she'd look after her, you know, probably, come on, now my mother will look after you, and my brother would, if you want to go to England, my brother will look after you there.
But why would she have to go to England? Why would someone else have to look after her baby?
But she had nobody else to look after her, Joe.
She had herself, Eileen.
She offered to Joe, read the judgment.
I'll give one line from the judgment.
Oh my God.
From Justice Declan Costello, since deceased.
Yeah.
I don't know, is your sister still with us, Greg? Or?
Yes.
I do not think that the respondents overemphasised the power of example on the lives of the pupils in the school, and they, i.e. the school, were entitled to conclude that the appellant's conduct was capable of damaging their efforts to foster in their pupils norms of behaviour and religious tenets which the school had been established to promote. So his judgment was within the rule of the school, so to speak, and the tenets of the school.
Yeah, and probably the law of land.
Well, there's no reference there now.
It was nothing to do with...
The law of the land at the time, Greg, would not allow anyone to be sacked because of their private life. There was no law.
Why did she lose the appeal then, Joe?
Because...
I mean, it went to three courts, industrial tribunal as well.
Yeah, but what my reading of
and
the...
And circuit court.
Yeah, my reading of the final one is... that Justice Declan Costello said she worked in a school. The school was run by a religious order. The religious order, within their own terms of reference, were entitled to, within their terms of reference, they were entitled to conclude that the appellant's conduct was capable of damaging their efforts to foster in their pupils norms of behaviour and religious tenets which the school had been established to promote. Now, it's quite obvious that what the norms that they're talking about there of behaviour and religious tenets are about her private life. And the fact I think what you might say here, and the fact that she had a child with a man who was married, and was living with a man who was married, not to her.
You reckon?
Will you, Greg, give me examples? Can you give me examples of other teachers who were dismissed for, Can you give me examples of other teachers who were dismissed because their norms of behaviour did not coincide with the religious tenets of the school? Has a teacher ever been sacked for having a drink? Has a teacher ever been sacked for being caught drunk driving? Has a teacher ever been sacked for leaving his wife or her husband? The answer is no. Because we would know about it. Now, Rebecca Roach...
Eileen was sacked.
Do you want to pursue your thesis then?
Look, Joe, what I got onto about was what Rebecca said.
Okay, well, Rebecca's still there. Let Rebecca answer. Rebecca, Greg is implying... Now, Greg, stop me if I'm wrong here, but you're implying that Eileen Flynn was sacked for a reason which had nothing to do with pregnancy or a married man. Is that correct, Greg?
Exactly.
Rebecca.
Just listening to it there now, I feel quite infuriated. Like, in the whole... You know, bearing in mind, back in 1982, the real reason given for her dismissal was she wasn't observing the Catholic ethos of the school. That was the real reason. But she was initially, when the school found out that she was carrying a child, she was initially brought in and she was told that she would be able to keep her job if she gave that child up for adoption. There was no question of Eileen not being able to support herself. She was in a stable, loving relationship with my dad.
Okay. She wasn't
a lonely, destitute young woman. She was well capable of, you know, providing a family environment for that child. So that's I rubbish that completely.
Okay. Can I read from section 4 of the court case?
You can read away, yeah.
This is Eileen. She emphatically denied that this was the case, while freely admitting that the relationship he had been referred to in the previous year was still continuing. But she was very troubled about the situation, and I explained this to my sister, how wrecked and worn she was, and she was contemplating leaving the town altogether. She asked the principal to pray for her. On the 2nd of April, the principal again referred to the parents' concern at the fact that they believed that the appellant was pregnant. She again denied the situation, but said that going home for the weekend, she'd have a long think about her position. On the 20th of April, at the most distressing and emotional interview, she finally admitted that she was pregnant. She explained that she had her baby, was due in July, and that she was thinking of going to France and England for the birth. The principal offered to help in any way she could, urging her not to go to France and offering to contact her brother, a priest in London, who might be able to help. This the principal did, and later in the week told her parents that arrangements had been made for her to look after her and her baby in London, and that she would stay in London, the principal's mother's house, on the way to the airport. In case of this narrative might suggest otherwise, I should make it clear that the principal was acting out of compassion and sympathy for the appellant and had no ulterior motive. Neither she nor the counsel had suggested otherwise in the court. She wanted to be of practical assistance and pressed the appellant to obtain medical help immediately and informed her of her rights to maternity leave. I don't know what I can say at that, Joe, you know. I was in the court for 4 or 5 days, you know.
You were there. And but even the phrase, she finally admitted she was pregnant.
Why
would you be in a scenario where you had
to... I don't know, Joe.
Why would your sister introduce London into the narrative? What's that got to do with anything?
I don't know. I have no idea. You know, I've no idea. She wanted to go away. She didn't want to have the baby in Ireland anyway.
So you're now saying that Eileen Flynn wasn't sacked?
Not at that stage, no.
And why was she sacked?
Well, because I went to court. They sacked her. They didn't renew her contract.
Yeah, but why didn't they? Well, if and I don't doubt the individual compassion of your sister, as you outlined there, and obviously your sister is quite hurt, as you are with the story. But the reality is that the school did sack her. She lost her job. She lost her career. Now, you're saying the school was more compassionate than has been previously been portrayed publicly, even though you say it's in the court record.
The bottom line is, Greg, what you should do, Joe, is talk to some of the parents that were there in New Ross at the time, okay, and see what the situation was like.
And what if the
It's not like today, Joe.
Yeah,
small little country town. Okay.
In fairness,
living in a pub.
Yeah, but
you know.
Well, hang on.
I know. What did you say?
What did you say? Okay. A girl. She wasn't a girl. She was a woman. A girl living in a pub.
Oh my days.
Yes. Go on.
Well, you go on.
A girl living in a pub, Joe, and coming to school the next day. Well, or not coming to school, not turning up for school, things like that.
That was never alluded to.
Where?
Her attendance record was never alluded to.
Well, have a look at the High Court judgment.
Saying she was sacked for another reason that no one ever heard about.
Well, that's quite possible. I don't know what the judge thought. The judge
said, I do not think that the respondents overemphasised the power of the example on the lives of the pupils in the school. They are entitled to conclude that the appellant's conduct was capable of damaging their efforts to foster in their pupils norms of behaviour and religious tenets which the school had been established to promote. There's no line in there, as far as I can see. I haven't got the full judgment. You have me there, I take that point. But there's no line in there saying that the school authorities were deeply upset that this girl, to use your phrase, was living in a pub.
I didn't mean that, Joe. But if you read,
writing to a newspaper in 1995, Sister Rosemary Duffy, is that your sister?
No.
Okay.
No,
okay. Now, just to be clear, Sister Rosemary Duffy of the Holy Faith Order wrote, Eileen Flynn was dismissed because in the town where most of the pupils and parents of the school lived, she openly, and despite warnings to the contrary, continued to live a lifestyle flagrantly in conflict with the norms which the school sought to promote. Now, the norms which the school sought to promote, I presume, never live in a pub. Were they?
Well, what,
especially if you're a girl.
Do schools have norms, Joe? Tell me.
No, we can't.
Do any school have norms?
Schools have an ethos. That's what they relied on. There's no mention by Sister Rosemary Duffy in 1995, long after this case. There's no mention that Eileen Flynn was dismissed because she didn't turn into school or was turning in. I don't even want to go down that. She was turning in with the smell of a pub sawdust off her or something because she was living in a pub. There's no reference there to that.
Well, Joe, I didn't live in New Ross, but I mean, the initial complaints were from the parents.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah,
their children were coming to them, Joe. You know, that the teacher was not satisfactory. That's as simple as that, Joe. They knew what she was doing at night time. She probably was.
Who knew what she was doing at night time?
Oh, my God.
Well, it's only a small little town, Joe, a little village.
So you're saying 13? You're saying 13 and 14-year-olds were going to the principal in the Holy Faith school?
No, their parents. They were going to their parents and complaining to the parents about the teacher.
And what were the nature of the complaints?
Well, what do you think?
No, I don't know what to think. What were the nature of the complaints that their teacher?
Well, teacher was letting me down. The teacher was letting me down.
Hell.
You know, she wasn't. Coming in late, and
that's not referred to here at all. Will you read out that line from the judgment? From the judgment about coming in late? You have the judgment in front of you. You're in court. Where and what day were those issues raised?
Okay, let's see.
Oh my God!
Yeah,
is that your sister in the background?
No, that's my wife.
Okay.
No, my wife. That's my wife. No, go away, Joe. No, go away. Go away. Go away. Please. No, I got on, Joe, but it's there somewhere, Joe. I can't drive. You know, it's six. What many
does your does your sis does your though? I'll let Rebecca back in a sec. But Greg, you're telling me your sister, who was principal in the school at the time, feels deeply aggrieved. Does she?
Well. It had an awful effect on her. You go to High Court, Joe. And
I know, I can imagine. I've covered High Court cases.
You've got to sit there and be questioned for hours and hours and hours. But, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it had an awful effect on her, I thought so, anyway.
Yeah.
She's a wonderful lady. And she did try to help Eileen. We all did. You know, I would have helped her.
And were you the brother? That was offered as the house in Dublin when she was on her way to London? Was that?
No, my mother. Mother's house. Yeah.
What was the London proposal?
Well, just look after her and have her baby over there. Bring the baby home.
No.
What else, Joe? What else?
But the maternity hospital's in Waterford.
But Eileen was talking about going to France or going to London, I know.
And then after the birth, she would come back to New Ross with the baby and that would be fine.
Exactly.
I wonder if any of the school children at the time in Eileen Flynn's case I don't know if we ever heard from parents at the time. I wasn't of an age, but like, do any children at the time remember going up to complain about Eileen Flynn about her lifestyle?
And the parents.
Teenagers.
And the parents. Joe.
And the parents. So what, like? So
but
what?
Just say, geez, but, so you know, what? Well,
you'll
do you
always get.
You
always. Yeah, you have to make a
how
judgment.
How do you complain?
The school authorities make a judgment on the complaint and they say this is vexatious, nothing to do with you. That's a woman's private life, as would be said today.
But I'm not talking about that private life. We're just talking about being a not right sheet teacher.
Funny, that was I haven't read everything, but I've read a lot this morning about Eileen Flynn. I never heard that. And even unfortunately, Eileen is now deceased, as you know, Greg.
She died
prematurely,
and I'm sorry.
I know that.
It ever happened. I'm sorry it happened, Joe. I really do. I mean, times are different now. My children have got. Children, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I don't, you know, it wouldn't have mattered to me where they were born, how they were born. I love them all.
Yeah, of course, of course. Rebecca, do you want to?
No.
Okay, are you?
No, Rebecca, we tried to help Eileen. That's all I can say. You know, what happened in court happened in the court.
Okay.
And
okay.
We were sorry. There's no doubt about okay. it.
Am I being? Is your wife trying to get you to
No, not really. No.
She's trying to ask you not.
She only came in. She didn't know I was on the air.
Okay, no, I want to give a correct portrayal of that phrase you used, Greg, in your defence, in your stead, that when you said to your, whoever was the other person on the phone, leave me be for a minute, that's what you meant. It was an accident, because she came in accidentally into the room.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, okay, you didn't mean anything else. Okay,
yeah, totally. No, you've been very kind to us, Joe. Just Rebecca, I really just feel, you know... We'd have loved to help Eileen. That's all I can say. You know?
Well, if you wish to continue, I need to take an ad break, but if we wish to continue, Greg, Rebecca's saying with us after the spray. Sorry, Greg.
I'll be here, Joe.
Okay, 51551.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Rebecca Roach. Rebecca, one, do you want to reply to Greg? But two, how was Eileen in her later years? Now, she was still relatively... young woman when she passed away, but how did she regard it over the years, Rebecca?
Well, she got back into education again.
Great.
She got a job in, I think things had moved on. I was living in the UK, and she started working in the CBS primary school in the town as a supply teacher. And she loved it so much. It was like she had gone back to what she, you know, what she had wanted to do, and she was given that passion, came back into her life again. And she worked there until she died, and she was highly regarded in school. You know, she had a lot of support from parents of from all backgrounds in the town. You know, obviously times had moved on. It was early 2000s. I can't remember the exact year. And, you know, people still talk to me. You know, adults come in to the bar that we all grew up in and talk to me about her, and that how she encouraged them to go on and do teaching, and lots of, you know, all these very positive feedback. You know, I feel sorry. I was a bit kind of frustrated there listening to the conversation on the phone while I was waiting. So,
but okay. I understand.
You know, she was a good woman, but there's two sides to every story.
Yeah, I know.
That's what I would always say. She was living with my dad when she had my brother. There was no talk of her going anywhere. I think that a problem tried to be removed, and she wasn't going. She wasn't doing what she had been asked to do: give her child up for adoption, and then she would be able to keep her job. She wasn't observing the Catholic ethos of the school. And, you know, I know parents complained about her. Parents in the town did complain about her.
Oh, did they? Okay.
Parents going around knocking door to door, getting the petitions to have her, because of a small town the way it was. You know, ultimately, my dad was separated, you know.
And do you know what the heading in those petitions were or was?
Well, no, but it has been discussed at points that they, to ask for her... dismissed from the school because of the lifestyle choice that she was making. And it was alluded to there, you know, she was living in a bar. It was an honest family business.
There was
like my dad, it's our family business. It's been in our family since like the 1930s. You know, and there's a family dwelling upstairs, four-story house. You know, that's what happened. You lived over your family business, you know, so... Again, it's just a small town, the way people talked. And, you know, I found it very frustrating just there listening to it, you know, because, you know, they did the best they could, you know.
Let me bring in, I need to take a quick break, and then I'll try and get David to tell his story. 51551.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
And I mentioned earlier the case of the writer, the late John McGahern, who was a primary school teacher in Clontarf in Dublin in the 50s and early 60s, and he was sacked. David McCarthy, you want to tell the story briefly, if you would, please, because you believe rightly that there are many similarities to what happened many of the women who spoke in this programme today. David.
Yes. Hi, Joe. David. Very briefly, the reference to John having been dismissed over an article, etc., etc. It wasn't just quite as simple as that.
Okay.
The main reasons why he was dismissed by the chairman of the board of management, Callan McCartan, was A, he married a non-Catholic, B, in a non-Catholic church, and C, honeymooned in the then communistic USSR. And on his return to this country, he was met with bye-bye.
And his career was ended as a young man.
That was his school career, from my memory then, was ended, yes.
Yeah, because he couldn't... schools were run by the Catholic Church. Okay, Mark, you said... Okay, there was... one of his books was banned by the censorship board, bizarrely, again. But he married, you say... I know the issue was brought up by other people, but you say because he married a non-Catholic in a non-Catholic country and honeymooned a communistic USSR. Oh, my God. Oh, David. Okay, David, thanks indeed for that story. Thanks to Greg. Thanks to Rebecca. Thanks to Patsy. Thanks to Donald. Thanks to Karina. Thanks to Elsie. Thanks to Anne Clearly. And also Hazel and all the other people who spoke up today. And Rebecca. I make it Rebecca Roach and condolences on the death of her stepmother, Eileen. I know she's a couple of years dead now, but just I haven't spoken to Rebecca since that. Back tomorrow, 1:45, Hugh Ormond produce. And Catherine Thomas is next.